Good morning. You're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I'm speaking with two scientists from the Nature Conservancy. Meredith Cornett is the Director of Conservation Science, and Mark White is the Forest Ecologist, and they're both based out of Duluth. We'll be talking about the impacts of climate change on the boreal forests of northeastern Minnesota. Now to that interview.
I'm Meredith Cornett. I'm the Director of Science with the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota.
I'm Mark White, Forest Ecologist for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota.
Thank you guys both for talking with me today. And just to start off, what kind of forest changes do we expect to see in relation to climate change in northeastern Minnesota in particular?
Sure, I'll take a crack at that one. So, I mean, it is warming. The climate is warming, you know, and it's been warming for a while in Minnesota. And, you know, we're already seeing some, you know, subtle shifts where, you know, species like red maple and sugar maple are kind of expanding their range. And, you know, they're essentially outcompeting some of the boreal species. And so temperature is definitely driving that. You know, so we know that, you know, over time, you know, those boreal, those northern species like paper birch and quaking aspen and spruce and balsam fir are going to be, you know, their abundance is going to be decreasing. You know, they're going to be shifting north. And these species that are more common south of us, like red maple and sugar maple and basswood and, you know, others are going to be increasing. But we don't really know, you know, really how the timing of all these changes, you know, some of it could be fairly abrupt or it could be gradual or it could be a combination of both. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty about how those changes will take place and, you know, whether they're, you know, graceful changes or whether they're, you know, very messy changes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do soil conditions play a part in what kind of forest species can survive? Because I think we see different types of soils here in northern Minnesota with a lot of heavy clay and bedrock.
Right.
Compared to more sandy soils.
Yeah, right. I mean, there is variability in soils in northeastern Minnesota. And, you know, we have a lot of shallow, rocky soils. You know, we do have, you know, clays and certainly more loamy soils too. So that's, you know, part of the thing is that these changes will play out differently, probably in different soil and topographic areas. And so, you know, it's soil is really going to be a significant thing, you know, as far as, you know, how these changes play out. You know, for instance, those thin rocky soiled areas are, you know, ones that are, you know, maybe those are going to be losing their, you know, their northern tree cover faster, you know, but, you know, then there has to be, you know, seed sources available that can occupy those habitats. And if, you know, species can't migrate fast enough, you know, we might end up with some areas that are, you know, very different from what we see now.
Yeah. I remember seeing a presentation by Lee Frelick from the U of M, and he was talking about the boundary waters perhaps becoming an oak savanna, whereas in some of the more clay soils we might see more hardwood trees.
That's certainly one scenario that could possibly play out, and I think it's important to underscore the great amount of uncertainty with any of these sorts of projections, and none of us can be 100% sure that it's going to go in one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So our strategy has been to try to hedge our bets and to ensure that the right species are available to occupy the niches as they open up on the landscape.
Mm-hmm. What are the most vulnerable species that we would see right now in the boreal forest that are probably the most sensitive to changes either in precipitation and temperature?
A few that we've really been focusing on are species like paper birch and white spruce that are very much at the southern edge of their range. Mm-hmm. And may potentially be beating a retreat toward the north. And so these are some of the examples that have been flagged as among the most vulnerable. And it's a real problem for us in some cases, because we were just having a conversation yesterday with some collaborators at the North Shore Forest Collaborative, and we all agreed that we love to plant white spruce. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons for that is that it's one of the long-lived conifers that was very prevalent at the time of European settlement in this area, very typical boreal species. But as we try to restore it, it has an additional advantage, which is that it's not one of the species that's browsed most favorably by white-tailed deer.
Oh, sure.
So it's a great one that doesn't require a lot of effort and follow-up on our part to nurture. But unfortunately, it is one of the species that's expected to fade over time. So once we realized that, we started to think about, well, if not white spruce, what really should we be planting out there?
I guess, can we talk about the research that the Nature Conservancy has been doing on, you know, how do we know which species will do well and which won't? Or, I know that the Forest Service did some experiments with plots where they heated them, I think, 7 degrees over maybe a span of 5 years. And the heated plots, deciduous trees were much higher and more developed than the native, the boreal species. Whereas the ones that were not heated, the boreal species were about the same height or pretty close.
There was another really nice example of that experiment, the before warmed experiment conducted at Cloquet Forestry Center, which is on my mind. I'll give an overview and you could talk a little bit more directly about the research. So we have been doing some comparisons. There are some really nice field experiments that are installed, very high test, sort of nicely replicated, very scientific studies like the ones we were just discussing. We also wanted to see what would happen with a more applied setting. So doing forestry the way forestry really happens on a large scale with a lot of seedlings. And mm-hmm. what we did was to generate some hypotheses about how different species might respond based on their current range and their projected range. Mark did a lot of fancy ecological modeling using GIS and some spatial software to come up with some ideas for what we should plant and where. And it was pointing to species like red oak, bur oak, maybe even some more southerly species that would be good candidates to start out with.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things we found from doing a lot of doing this modeling work was that a lot of these species, their natural migration rates probably weren't going to be fast enough, you know, to really reach these areas, you know, to keep pace with the rate of warming. And, you know, so we look at these species and, you know, we look at their, you know, essentially what we know about their traits, you know, how they, you know, their seed production, shade tolerance, you know, how they tolerate drought and those kinds of things. And so, you know, we're able to at least put together some good ideas on the kinds of species we could be managing for out there. And so in this case, we put out red oak, bur oak, and white pine, right, really across a big swath of northeastern Minnesota. And we also tried different seed zones, right? We took seed sources, local seed sources for those mm-hmm. species, because they all occur in northeastern Minnesota. They're just like bur oak and red oak are not very abundant. Mm-hmm. But then we also took more southern seed sources where that presumably developed in a warmer climate conditions. And so we can plant those together out in the landscape and, you know, compare how they grow and survive, mm-hmm. you know, under typical forestry conditions and operations. So it gives us a real world look at how these species are going to perform. So to date, we've We've had this project going for 4 years now. And so we've been tracking these seedlings, basically their height growth and their mortality and their diameter growth, you know, over those 4 years. So we're starting to get some interesting results out of that study. And it, I mean, in a nutshell, it says that these temperate tree species like red oak and bur oak and white pine, local and southern sea sources survive and grow pretty well across northeastern Minnesota. I mean, there's some differences based on, you know, site conditions, temperatures, soils, things like that. But, you know, by and large, you know, these tree species are, you know, we think they can grow in many places in northeastern Minnesota. And so it gives us another management option if we're trying to maintain, you know, forest cover and forest functions across the landscape.
I want to add to that it's important to recognize these species that we've been experimenting with are native. They're within the current, they're within this local region just as part of how they've evolved, just not in very great numbers. And so they have the potential of expanding, but as Mark was saying, not necessarily at a rate that's going to keep up with climate change. So we did not bring new species into the region, but we were interested in exploring the potential of species that are already here.
It's nice to hear you use the word region, because I think a lot of people say, oh, it's native to Minnesota, but ecologically speaking, Minnesota is just a false. I mean, that's just a political boundary. It has nothing to do with the environment itself. But is there like a distance range that you look in, or just maybe like that?
So we're looking, if you think about northeastern Minnesota, we have kind of the Arrowhead region, you know, which is this, you know, sort of glacial landform dominated landscape. And, you know, so we have, you know, seed sources kind of within that area. And then we just basically go one ecological region south of that, which is the essentially the Drifton Lake Plains, which is a little warmer, drier, you know, more sandier soils, you know, so a little different environment for, you know, tree development. And so we hopefully we're capturing some differences, you know, some genetic and, you know, phenotypic differences within these different tree species. Yeah, so we might be looking at trees as much as probably less than 100 miles, probably like in the, you know, 75-mile range maybe is what we're looking at. So not a great distance really. You know, in the next 50 years or, you know, 100 years, you know, we're in this sort of transitional period. You know, we kind of have to figure out what we can do.
And it is a question of time scale and policy, how effective our ability to reverse the climate change that's already underway, or at least stabilize. So those are important questions, but there's also a great deal of attention that we should be paying to helping forests make a graceful transition from their current condition to whatever the future holds. And so we're trying as hard as we can to plan for multiple scenarios, and one of them will become reality. But again, on what time frame, it's unclear.
Would you have a recommendation for a private landowner looking at managing maybe 40 acres or so of their forested land, for where landowners can go to find out more about what they should be thinking about when they pick trees to plant?
Right. That's a great question.
Diversity is really important. And so thinking certainly about site conditions and trying to make sure that we're matching the right soil type, the right soil moisture, other aspects of growing condition. Are we on a hill? Are we on a side slope? So those are all important things to think about, as they always have been. But so within that range of site conditions, picking a diversity of species that would be appropriate for those. And then I think that there are some really great new tools out there to help people think about not just today's forest, but the forest of the future. One of those, again, we'll provide the link, is called the Climate Change Tree Atlas. And this is a tool on the web that's been up and running for a few years now by the USDA Forest Service, where you can actually go through and select a species that you're interested in. Tree species only at this point is what they've got up there, and look at its current distribution and then look at projected future habitat under different climate change scenarios. And so this is something that we find very useful in talking about our work. One of the best examples that I just came across recently is red maple. It was just very visceral for me because I was just in Florida last week for my daughter's break from school and was down there in southern Florida in the Everglades walking along, and along comes a species that looked very familiar to me, and that was red maple. And so this species that has been so incredibly successful at colonizing throughout this entire range is one that we're anticipating, again, will be more prevalent here in northern Minnesota. We're sort of a receiving grounds. And as you look at the climate change projection models for just that one species alone, you can really sort of see it shifting over time and starting to occupy more of its habitat up in northeastern Minnesota and maybe fading a bit from the Florida landscape. So
I'd just like to remind everyone, you're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm Emily Nelson, and today we're talking about the impacts of climate change on Minnesota's forests, specifically the boreal forests of northeastern Minnesota. I'm speaking with two scientists from the Nature Conservancy. Meredith Cornett is the Director of Conservation Science, and Mark White is the Forest Ecologist. Now back to that interview.
So if I could, I want to not paint such a bleak picture about species coming, species going. As Minnesotans, we are very tied to our forest landscapes, and it's an important part of our cultural heritage, a huge part of our economy. We have a $7 billion industry that's tied to our forests in northern Minnesota. And thinking about a private landowner in that situation, I would probably be thinking pretty carefully about whether I was going to invest in planting a ton of paper birch, for example. But I think that we need to also identify those places where some of these more northerly species can hang on for at least the next several decades. And so that's the direction that we're taking now in our research, to really try to identify those places that white spruce, paper birch, balsam fir have the best chance of persisting into the future, even as the climate warms. I mean, there's going to come a point where that's not going to be a viable strategy, but for now, as we're talking about making a graceful transition, or perhaps there will be some policy advances that help to stabilize the climate, that there may be some landowner opportunities there to be oases for some of these species.
Yeah, I mean, when we think about these boreal species, you know, they're not just going to sort of shift en masse, right? Because there is a lot of variability in the landscape. I mean, there are parts of northeastern Minnesota that are warming fairly rapidly, but there are other areas that are, you know, warming less rapidly. And for instance, there are cool environmental microsites and soils that have, you know, greater, you know, soil moisture availability. So the idea is to kind of use that heterogeneity or variability in the landscape and, you know, maintain some of these species because they are really important for, you know, economically as well as wildlife habitat and biodiversity and water flow and streams. And, you know, there's, you know, many reasons to try to think about, you know, maintaining these species in places where they can grow.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Can we back up just a little bit and talk about some of the obstacles that the more southerly species face when they're migrating north, or, you know, getting them there in time to fill the gaps of dying?
Right. I mean, there are, yeah. So the natural migration rates, you know, we have a pretty good idea of how fast some of these species can move. But, you know, there also has to be, you know, for a species to really transition and move north, there has to be a, you know, there has to be a big enough population there, you know, enough, you know, sort of a threshold level where, you know, seeds can disperse. And then there's, you know, fragmentation, for instance, you know, we have roads and development. And in northeastern Minnesota, we don't have so much of that, but, you know, we do have some, and those are also barriers to natural plant migration that didn't exist, you know, when plants shifted north after the last glaciation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are other constraints, you know, that are going to, you know, influence, you know, the natural migration of these species.
And then I just also wanted to point out maybe invasive species. In Lake mm-hmm. County, we've got a big infestation right. of buckthorn along the shore. It's in the Larsmont area. Mm-hmm. And we've also got Japanese barberry that
yes,
has just
right.
taken over yeah. some of the forest, yeah. you know, under the canopy.
Yeah, invasive species, of course, love a vacuum. And that's one of the things that the University of Minnesota research we were talking about has really underscored, that species like, for example, buckthorn and honeysuckle may really benefit from these warmer conditions. They may become more competitive. And so making sure that we have a diverse and healthy forest to mm-hmm. begin with can, not a lot of sort of blank space that's sort of open and ready for invasion by these species that
yeah.
are so hard to manage once they become established. That's a really important strategy. One other thing I wanted to mention is that it is very easy to feel discouraged about all of these changes that are coming our way. But one of the things that I take a lot of inspiration from is how good Minnesota is at getting trees in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
We plant a ton of trees in this landscape. I think at one point I heard that the forest industry alone plants a million trees a year up in northern Minnesota. And so we have the skills, but one of the things that we lack is new plant material, being able to really keep our nursery practices modern and future looking. And mm-hmm. so we've got a lot of thinking to do about how we do our planting and what we choose to plant,
mm-hmm.
but we know we can do it because we've been active in the landscape doing tree planting over vast areas for many, many decades.
Where would you suggest people go if they're interested in getting involved?
I think that certainly having a look at the materials available online is a great place to start. If you live in a community that is already thinking about climate change, getting involved with the climate adaptation planning process, because there are a lot of opportunities to think about things like city trees, for example, and what species we're going to use in those situations. Getting involved by suggesting a community get involved, suggesting the community begin an adaptation planning process is also a great idea.
Yeah, and of course there's the county soil and water conservation districts that are, you know, great resources for private landowners.
What do you guys see going forward?
So I guess I'll just talk about the way that I have been thinking about restoration. That's was what brought me really into the field of conservation to begin with, and this whole idea that we can put things back the way they were to try to reestablish the health and vitality of a forest ecosystem, say, like that of northern Minnesota. And again, climate change has really forced me to think about that very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And as I do that, I went for sure through a grieving process that maybe, you know, this possibility of having those incredible historic forests back. It's not in the cards. But there, we will sustain the forest. That's something that we can commit to and work on together. It won't be the same forest that was here 150 years ago. We won't get that back, but we'll have components of it. And I think about it in the way that we could approach a historic restoration of an old building, for example. It's something that I frequently draw on when I think about what the forests of the future could look like. So one of my favorite coffee shops down in Minneapolis went through a transformation process where they were an old warehouse and they gutted the building, but they still had a lot of the original character, a lot of those bricks and beams and hardwood floors, and they added a lot of new components. They added new wiring and they added better windows and insulation. And so I like to think of it as an opportunity to have a forest of the future that is performing all the vital functions that we need it to perform: clean water, clean air, habitat, outdoor recreation, timber, but that it'll be more resilient to the conditions that are coming down the line.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're in this business, this conservation sort of restoration world, you know, you have to be an optimist. You have to sort of believe that, you know, we can make a difference. And, you know, I think we can. You know, we have, there's a lot of great science happening out there. And, you know, we just have to, you know, as a society, we just have the will. We have to have the will to, you know, go out and try these things and make mistakes and learn and, you know, kind of keep moving forward. And, but, you know, like Meredith said, I mean, we have some pretty good basic principles about how to approach, you know, sort of sustaining these landscapes, these forest ecosystems over time. And, you know, we have to do it.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH-LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Conservation Corner was produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District with funding from NOAA and the Office for Coastal Management, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.